1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. Today's edition of the program, we're going to break down the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot coming up in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Chuck Garpine, the host of the White Sox Talk podcast and the White Sox beat reporter at NBC Sports Chicago. We talk with him all things White Sox. We'll preview what's to come for this season, talk about free agency, the Sox last year, and also the MLB lockout. It's a great interview. It comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. If you want to watch more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. I want to start today with this question. What's the purpose of a Hall of Fame? Big picture, not just baseball, basketball in general. When you hear the words Hall of Fame, why does it exist? What's the point? What's the premise? It's to honor the best of the best, right? Not going to put in somebody who doesn't deserve it. But also, you're not going to keep somebody out if they're integral to what you're promoting. That one's a hard pill to swallow for some people. I get it. I was once on the opposite side, on the opposite spectrum. For many years, I used to say, you know what? No steroid users in the Hall of Fame. None. By the ballot, wouldn't vote for any of them. I was adamant. Got into arguments with people about it all the time. I never understood the other side. I never understood why there'd be a benefit in letting someone in who used steroids or who cheated. And some of you might say, well, John, you're still wrong. There is no benefit. I hear you. And I used to agree with you. But I want to posit this to you. What's the point of a Hall of Fame? What are we doing with having one of these? Are we supposed to sit around and be gatekeepers? Or, if you're an integral part of the game, you deserve to be there, no matter what. I mean, let's not forget, Bud Selig is in the Hall of Fame. He promoted steroid use. Everybody who I've had on this program has said there are steroid users in the Hall of Fame. I don't know who they are. There are suspicions and certain guys, there were rumors. The fact is, though, everybody agrees. There are steroid users. There are known cheaters in the Hall of Fame today. So what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to continue to reject history? Or at this point, should we let bygones be bygones, recognize there was an era in baseball of rampant cheating, and move on? Like it or not, Barry Bonds was the greatest player of his generation. One of the greatest players of all time. Steroids or not. He was already at 400 homers before he started using. Or supposedly started using. And you could say, well, he did use. That's his punishment. Well, everybody did. It was promoted because baseball, at the time, was unpopular after the lockout in 1994. Baseball needed something, essentially resurrect itself and be better. 1998, so Those are McGuire home run chains. Everybody remembers him. I'm not saying those two should be in. Although I wouldn't have a problem with them getting in. But for my ballot, I would be voting for the best of their era. Out of all steroid users, out of everybody who supposedly cheated, we're the best. We're the greatest. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens. They were. They defined the era. Sammy Sosa, before steroids, was nothing. Journeyman. A lot of these guys, before steroids, nothing. Those two, Hall of Famers already. Hall of Famers already. No doubt, no question. Clemens already won an MVP. Bonds, too. They were great. The steroids might have made them last longer, but the fact is, they would have gotten in anyway. They were the greatest of their era. You got some guys who needed steroids to even be good. Rafael Palmeiro. Rafael Palmeiro was with the Cubs. Made an all-star team, hitting 9 home runs in a season. Used to be a contact hitter. 180, 190 hits a year, 9 homers, 284, all-star. And now we sit here today, 500 homers, 3,000 hits. Obviously, he needed the steroids. That's no question. Mark McGuire always used him. Him up hitting 49 homers. David Ortiz. I had Tom Berducci on last week. We talked about this. The fact is, David Ortiz failed a test. I don't care if it was anonymous, if the commissioner who encouraged cheating tried to clear his name. The fact is, it came back positive. And look at Ortiz's numbers in Minnesota, and in Boston. David Ortiz was about to be demoted. He was about to be out of the game. That's why Minnesota traded him. He did nothing. 259 hitter, 10, 15 homers. He was nothing special. Bigger guy, first baseman, DH. That's it. Couldn't hit for average. Really didn't hit for power. Did nothing till he came to Boston. Yeah, I'm going to speculate something was up. And if it were me, I wouldn't vote for him. Alex Rodriguez. I would if he didn't get suspended again and again. He kept using. He admitted to using him with the Rangers, then got caught with the Yankees, then got caught again. Now he's sitting here trying to clear his name. Hey, Shark Tank. Hey, Rod Ventures. Shows on CNBC. The fact is, you cheated. You're not getting in. You were caught multiple times. That's the difference. I know it's a fine line. I know not everybody agrees with it, but that's the line I take. And we got guys who simply aren't in because of petty political beliefs. Curt Schilling is a Hall of Famer. I don't care if you don't agree with his politics. Doesn't matter. O.J. Simpson's a murderer. He's in the Hall of Fame. Nobody said a word. There was no push to take him out of the Hall of Fame after the crime. Him getting arrested. No, he's still there. I had Curt Schilling on my program. He's being taken out for words being said. Not even actions, just words. His opinion. You know, Ty Cobb was a racist. Bad racist. He's in. First ballot. First inaugural Hall of Fame class. You could say, yeah, it's a different era, but the point is still there. They could remove Ty Cobb anytime they want if they wanted to. They don't. We're not talking about off the field. We're not talking about if they're a good person. We're talking about what they did on the field. What were their contributions to the game? Curt Schilling is the only member of the 3,000 strikeout club besides Roger Clemens for steroid use who is not in the Hall of Fame. They put in Mike Mussina. I love Mike Mussina. Wanted him to get in. But Mike Mussina has no milestones. Got in. Why is Curt Schilling on his 10th year in the ballot still not in the Hall of Fame? Put the politics aside. Great pitcher. Good postseason resume. Great regular season. And he has a milestone. It'd be way different. He never reached anything. We're putting in Pedro Martinez, first ballot. John Smoltz, first ballot. They deserve to be there. What about Curt Schilling? Similar amount of wins? Similar amount of strikeouts? He should be there. Want to say this, too. What did we say the Hall of Fame was for? The greatest, right? Were you integral to the game? Were you the greatest? Were you one of the best players in baseball history? Did you know second baseman with the most amount of home runs ever at his position is not in the Hall of Fame and might drop off the ballot? Jeff Kent. Yeah. Most home runs ever at his position, not even in. 18, 20%, nothing. I know the argument is defense, all-around play, not a high enough war. But let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Bottom line. The Hall of Fame is for the best of the best. If you're the greatest at your position, you deserve to be there. The greatest power-hitting second baseman in all of baseball history is not in the Hall of Fame today. Is that a problem? Shouldn't that be a problem to you? The greatest ever. You know who had the old record? Ryan Sandberg. 282 homers. That's a 377. MVP winner. Why the hell is he not in there? You're the greatest at your position. You should be in. No questions asked. He's a record holder. But I'm in the hall, my gosh. Still waiting on that. And yes, Billy Wagner should be there too. I get it. Billy Wagner may not have any records per se, but one of the greatest left-handed relievers of all time. One of the greatest closers of all time. Top 10 in saves, 400+, dominant, could have played longer too. I've had Wagner on. I'm going to have him on again this week. He was a dominant pitcher. The one drawback for him that everybody says is the postseason resume. I get it. I understand. Should have maybe done better in those bigger moments, but the fact is, he was an effective closer. Those were anomalies. Look at his track record. Look at what he did. You know, the guy struck out more players per nine innings than Mariano Rivera. He was a more dominant pitcher. He beats you with his fastball, with his slider. And played for less time. And didn't get a chance to close till the midpoint in his career. Didn't start as a closer. The time in which he was a closer, though, his peak was great. And he should be there. And there's no question, there really shouldn't be an argument about him. And there's been a lot of support for him recently. That's why I have him on my program. I want people to really hear his case. Because there is a case to be made. More than a case. I mean, to me, I would have voted for him right away. And that's the extent of my ballot. There are a lot of good players who fall just short. A lot of guys who I won't vote for, like Gary Sheffield, great player, would not have been a Hall of Famer without the steroids. Would never have reached the milestones he reached without steroids. Sorry. Great player, respect him a bunch. But he needed the steroids to prop himself up. Todd Helton, Coors Field, next. Todd Helton never had any milestones to his name. Scott Rowland, same thing. Never had a milestone. Scott Rowland was never a big-time franchise-type player. He was a nobody. Not a big deal when he played. I remember. I grew up watching him. Big rookie, highly touted. But he never achieved really too much. A couple of World Series, great, but never was a big league leader or an all-star, big-time all-star, and everybody knew him. He was a regional guy, good player, not a Hall of Famer. Andrew Jones, you can make a case, but didn't play long enough and really declined after 2006. Manny Ramirez needed steroids. Same with Sammy Sosa. Andy Pettitte, too. Andy Pettitte used steroids. He admitted to it. And Andy Pettitte's ERA is way too high in my book. Then again, Jack Morris got it. So, can't make the ERA argument anymore, but I could make the steroid one. How he needed them to continue to be good. A lot of really interesting first-year guys on the ballot, and I do have a couple of extra votes. I would actually toss one to Mark Burley. You might say, why? What are you doing? Mark Burley wasn't a superstar. Maybe not. That's a personal bias. Mark Burley, I loved, is a model of consistency. 200-plus innings pitched for 12 years in a row. 200-plus wins. Pitched a contact guy. Lasted this long in baseball, throwing 85 miles per hour. That's skill. That's craft. Didn't overpower everybody. Didn't have a 99-mile-per-hour fastball. He thought about what pitches to throw. He was an actual pitcher, not a thrower. Won a World Series. Respected pitcher. Consensus number one for years with the White Sox. I would 100% toss a vote to Mark Burley. Just so that he doesn't fall off the ballot, too, with that 5% rule. I'd also toss one more to Jimmy Rollins. You might disagree, and that's fine. This is kind of another personal preference, but do you really remember who Jimmy Rollins was in his prime? I do. I grew up watching him. MVP 2008. Great player. My goodness. 2,400 hits. Got that MVP. Not a bad player. All-time leader in Philly's history in hits. He was a Philly great. You know, there are a lot of times when it comes to the Hall of Fame where certain players who just play for franchises get in. You know, Chipper Jones, whom I love, had no milestones, didn't get to 500 homers, didn't get to 3,000 hits, got in the Hall of Fame. Why? All-time Brave. One of the greatest Braves players ever in the Hall of Fame. Jimmy Rollins, you could argue, one of the greatest Philly players ever. Leads them in hits. 2306 in Philadelphia. Speedy, played good defense. All-star, MVP. I would not mind tossing a vote to Jimmy Rollins either. A couple of other guys I would think about but probably would not vote for. Joe Nathan, Prince Fielder. Prince Fielder was a Hall of Famer, and I think he would have gotten in if he played a little bit longer. Tim Hudson is still out there, too, on his second year. Bobby Abreu and Torrey Hunter. All these guys very close, but probably would not get my vote. Just a bit too short. As far as my ballot goes, Curt Schilling, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Billy Wagner. That's four. Jeff Kent, five. Mark Burley, six. And Jimmy Rollins, seven. That's my ballot. Wish I had a vote. I don't. Got to be a member of the BBWAA for 10 years. But we've had people on this program, and we will continue to have people on this program who do vote. Had Tom Berducci last week. Going to have David Haw again on soon. Potentially Bruce Miles, other people that we're going to get on, talk about the ballot. It always makes for an interesting conversation. And there's a reason why, I've been told this many times, there's a reason why baseball's Hall of Fame is so scrutinized. Because it's so public. All these writers voting, it's tracked, everybody cares. There's a reason why people care about this and not necessarily the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame. Everybody gets into the basketball one. This one is so elite. Even the football one. Got five or six guys going in every year. Here, you're lucky if you get one or two. This is an exclusive club. Hard to get in. Needs 75% of all votes cast. There are about 500 ballots. You need 75% of the writers to agree that you're a Hall of Famer to get in. There are great players who didn't get in right away. There are great players who should have been in. Fell off the ballot. So, it's not easy. Always talk with my dad about this. We always get into fights about it. He always goes, well, if you know they're a Hall of Famer, they should be in. If you have to question it, they're out. I understand the argument. Maybe my definition of a Hall of Famer is a bit more liberal. But at the end of the day, if you're close to the milestones that you're supposed to get to, you meant a lot to your team, if you meant a lot to the game, you should probably be in. If you needed steroids as a crutch, if you really just weren't that good, if you come close but not close enough, no, you're not. There's a Hall of Very Good. There's a Hall of Fame. That's why it's called the Hall of Fame. It's an exclusive club, and you have to be damn good, great, to get in. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Chuck Garfine comes up next, so stay tuned. Talk Chicago. Amber Johnson Blumel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the White Sox beat reporter for NBC Sports Chicago, host of the White Sox Talk podcast, and a White Sox insider, ESPN 1000. Please welcome Chuck Garfine to the program. Chuck, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Back for, I believe, the second time. So, John, you got a great podcast. I appreciate the invite, and it's good to be back with you.
What have you been up to during this whole lockout?
Believe it or not, I played golf today.
Really?
In Chicago. So I never would expect in the middle of December I would be actually playing golf, and yet that is what I did today. But other than that, I've got my White Sox podcast that I've been doing a lot of, subbing for Bulls pre and post every once in a while, and taking time off because for about 6 or 7 months I don't really have too many days off, so I use them up now.
How's it feel to have nothing to report on, to be out of that rhythm?
It's a little unsettling, although not yet. There was a lot obviously early and the off season right before the lockout. And for the last few years, these moves have kind of trickled out. So there hasn't been too many moves that have happened by now. And I mean, there's enough to kind of keep you going. You got Christmas coming up and it's like, okay, that's all right. I have a feeling that the unsettling part will enter into the equation in January. I think that's when it'll be like, okay, let's get down to business here. And if there is no business, then comes the concern that this might bleed into spring training, which I hope it doesn't. So I haven't felt too much of a loss just yet, but January, that might be a little different story for me.
What's your indication on the lockout right now? Do you see a deal being in place before spring training?
That's the question. And I don't know the answer to that. These things can take on a life of their own in a good way or bad way, usually bad, but sometimes hopefully if you're optimistic, it is possibly good, that they could all of a sudden they can have a come to Jesus moment and, hallelujah. But I'm not feeling that right now. One thing I've been saying is that these two sides are not talking to each other or with each other. They're talking at each other. I feel like I'm watching Fox News and CNN broadcasting their own beliefs, and there really hasn't been too much common ground. So I'm a little pessimistic right now that they'll finish by February 1st, but all it takes is like get in the room and find some common ground and let's get on with this. Cause it does seem from an outsider's perspective, it would seem like, why are we going through this? And I get why they're going through it. There's a lot of bad blood that's been brewing for a long time. I think a lot of this is personal. And so I think that's really, is in the soup, so to speak. So is it going to end by February 1st? I really, really hope so. I don't have the answer to it, though.
What changes do you expect to come to the game after everything gets resolved?
Well, there's a lot of things that the league wants to adopt, universal DH, possibly a pitch clock at some point. But from what I think Manfred might have said, when there's this negotiation going on, they would prefer not putting all that into the negotiation. Maybe universal DH gets in there. But I don't think there's going to be too much. I mean, you're going to hear a lot of things. I mean, look, one of the things that the players union proposed was having two divisions in each league. And that's a big adjustment. And I just can't see that happening. You might see more playoff teams. I don't know. And then it comes down to, it's all about money. It is all about money and someone's going to have to give. And I would hope that, I'm just going to sound like I'm siding with the players, but I would hope the owners would. I mean, if you see where revenues have gone and where player salaries have gone, player salaries aren't going along with the times. I could see the owners being concerned with, you know, are we going to continue to have this revenue that we had before? So they don't want to get in. They don't want to give too much. This is way above my pay grade. So I don't know how it's all going to play out, but there will be hopefully some compromise. I see slight changes. When I say slight changes, changes that don't affect you as a viewer, you as a fan. I don't think that's really going to come into this. This is really about money and how best to distribute that money. And I think that is what we're going to, in the end, see at the end of this lockout.
Chuck Garfine here on Sports Talk Chicago. Chuck, what's your evaluation of this past season for the White Sox?
This past season, it took a step. It was not the step that I was hoping for. I was hoping, let's get them to the ALCS. You want them to win a World Series. But I didn't feel like this was really like, if they were all like playing their best baseball at the end of the season, I would say, yeah, they have a shot, but they weren't for weeks. So, but even still, I wanted them to win a series. And that would have been I think White Sox fans would have felt better about the season if they would have beaten the Astros. That would have been like, you would have walked around going, we beat the Astros, World Series is next. And the way it unfolded, there's this feeling of, they got to the playoffs and they were outmatched. And we need work to do. The Sox need to improve. And so that's kind of where things are at. And but it's tough to judge what the team is going to be like, because this is just a long off season to go in terms of moves, and we don't know what's coming. But there was a lot of progress all over the place. Dylan Cease stands out for me, led the team in strikeouts. He was an X factor for me in terms of what he would, if he could take the next step. Liam Hendricks was awesome. That has turned out to be a great pickup. It's only the first year of his stint with the White Sox, but that's a real good one. They had so many injuries. Now, all teams all have injuries, but these were some big ones for them, and they came time and time and time again. I think Luis Robert kind of went under the radar for what he did at the end of the year. The last 2 months, he was an MVP. Those are the kind of numbers he was putting up. Can he sustain that over the course of a whole season? I don't know. But if you compare his 2021 numbers with Jose Abreu's numbers in 2020, Abreu played 60 games, Robert played 68, they're dead even. How about that? So Luis Robert was phenomenal. I mean, I can go one by one by one all over the place, but then this would be like a five-hour podcast. But in the nutshell, they were good. They won 93 games. Like, sign me up for that. That was great. But they were a much better team in the first half than the second half. And it was kind of a deflating end, other than the great one victory they had at home in game three with the blackout. That was the highlight after a highlight. That was the Field of Dreams game was second. But other than that, I think that's where I go with the Sox in 2021.
How do you explain their downfall from the first half to the second half? What happened?
You know, the starting pitching, starting pitching was more of an issue in the playoffs than the second half. You know, I haven't really thought about this in a while, so I'm kind of like, all right, now I have to go back through this and think about what happened in the second half. They just weren't consistent. Eloy Jimenez got off to a great start when he came back, and then he just didn't have it. You know, Tim Anderson, they were resting him a lot. They just didn't have, and then they trade for Craig Kimbrell. That didn't turn out. They trade for Cesar Hernandez. That didn't turn out. And what's the difference between the Atlanta Braves and the Chicago White Sox? The Atlanta Braves were like 4-for-4 with their trades at the deadline for these four outfielders. And like two of them, well, all of them were great, but one ends up being the Eddie Rosario out of nowhere is the NLCS MVP. And then Jorge Soler, World Series MVP. That's what they got at the deadline. The White Sox got Craig Kimbrell, who just could not adjust to the eighth inning role. They're now they want to trade him. Cesar Hernandez, I didn't even recognize him. I don't know what happened to him. So, you know, I think that's the difference between a team that won a World Series and a team that could not get out of the ALDS.
How do you feel about Tony La Russa's performance? I know there were some questions about him being retained. He obviously was. How do you evaluate his performance in 2021?
Yeah, you know what? I think I and many other people probably assumed that, well, he's been down this road before. He'll, from, you know, help spring training to get to know his players and his coaching staff. And by opening day, this will be a fine-tuned machine in terms of decision-making, in terms of him as a manager and his coaching staff. And that wasn't the case. I think it was still a feeling out process with his players and him getting to know his players and what they can do. And the players are getting to know him getting to know his coaching staff. There was not a single coach on that team that he'd ever coached with before. So that was an adjustment for him to make. I mean, he knew the guys, but that's different. He hadn't been in the foxhole with them. And it took months for them to figure stuff out. It maybe just took the whole year. So, and despite all that and all the injuries, and you want to throw in the Yermín Mercedes controversy, they won 93 games. So I'd like to think that in 2022, the coaching staff and specifically Tony La Russa will kind of have, you know, a little more of just experience with each other, with the team, and hopefully we don't have too many, you know, blow-ups during the season. But that is going to happen regardless because it's baseball and there's a lot of decisions that have to be made. But it did feel like at times I was wondering if, like, Tony was a lone wolf making these decisions, like where were some of these decisions coming from? And even though we had a little more access with the players and the coaches, you know, I don't feel like I've had the greatest pulse of what's really going on there. And no one does, like compared to before, because we just don't have the time with these guys to really get to know. I mean, it's a lot of speculation. I try to get as much information as I can, but we are limited. And I know there's a pandemic and I am concerned about media access going forward. But if it turns out that, you know, this is a whole other topic, but it's something that is on every single media member's mind right now. If we never get back in the clubhouse, that is going to hurt us, and it's really going to hurt the fans in terms of what you really can know about a team and a player, because there is a lot of information that we used to gather and we have not been able to gather it. So that's which provides a lot more speculation, reckless potential speculation, because we don't know how all the answers anymore. Or not, we don't have as many as we used to have, I should say, to gain that knowledge. So that is that's something that concerns me. And I hope the league and the players and the teams recognize that.
Based on the direction you see now, do you think it'll ever go to like it was before?
I don't know. I am concerned it won't. It's kind of like you let the toothpaste out of the tube and it's tough to get the toothpaste back in there. But all it takes is for the league to recognize, you know, what we in the media can bring to the table. And I don't think that, I'll just speak for the White Sox media, I don't think we infringe on the space and the, we're good guys. other teams might feel differently about the media. So I don't know how it is all going to play out. Another concern of mine is this somehow ends up in the negotiation that's going on right now. And if that happens, that's not good. So we'll see.
Chuck Garpine here on Sports Talk Chicago. Chuck, what needs should the Sox address this offseason once hopefully the lockout gets solved up?
Oh, I mean, okay. Second base, and then second base. right field, I don't know what the Rick Hahn and company are extremely prepared for all scenarios. So I know they have plan A, B, C, all the way down to Z for all we know. But there are right fielders out there that can potentially get free agents, trades, and then DH. So that's offense, second base, right field, DH, and you've got Gavin Sheets and Andrew Vaughn, and I'm not sure where they would potentially fit with all that going on. Starting pitching, they need some depth there for sure. They need some more bullpen help. I mean, they got Kendall Graveman. That was a great signing by them. I love that they took him away from the Astros. I think that's, Rick Hahn's got work to do. And, you know, he was actually saying in our, in his last press conference before the lockout began that, you know, there was a concern, like, what if they, the lockout ends February 1st and you got 2 weeks to get all your deals done? And he's like, let's do it. Like, he wishes he could do all his shopping and all his moves in 2 weeks. He doesn't want to, like, things to, like I said, trickle in all off season. So I think that is going to be an exciting time. Whenever this lockout ends and there's going to be this window to get all these moves done, it's going to be insane.
Are they willing to spend money?
I think so. They're all right. So let me just say this. And this is not me defending the organization. It might sound that way, but right now, give or take a few million, their payroll's at $170 million. Like, last year was a record and it was 128. So they already are spending money. Would I like them to spend more? Yeah, I definitely want to. I want them to. But I think, I don't know what the budget is for them, but they're already well over what they were last year. And we'll see where it ends up at the end of the offseason. But I mean, I don't want to speak for Jerry Reinsdorf, but I would certainly like to believe that he wants to win badly. This is his opportunity after going through this massive rebuild for several years. Why, you know, not really go for it? And I know he wants to go for it. So I could see him, and you can see it in the money that they're shelling out. And one thing that kind of gets lost is that the White Sox did make a big, humongous move for themselves at the end of the year, near the end of the season, when they signed Lance Lynn to an extension. If they had not done that, Lance Lynn right now is a free agent, or he may have signed somewhere else. So the White Sox took care of that signing already. So you can almost add that to the list of moves this offseason, because had they not done that, I don't want to even think about losing Lance Lynn on this team.
Is Carlos Rodon going to join him? Do you think the White Sox get him back?
That's a real big mystery for me, just because I don't know what the value is for him. And this is no slight on him. I'm confused. when he was at his best, when he was healthy, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball. He was a Cy Young Award candidate. And he didn't have any injuries. His body wasn't prepared for this kind of workload. So the optimist in me feels like, well, he'll train to be prepared for it next year. He just didn't have a base behind him, underneath him, I should say, because he had barely pitched over the last, in previous 3 years because of injuries. So the optimist in me feels like, well, and I think the optimistic teams out there are going to be like, I will give him a 3-year deal or a 4-year deal, and for a lot of money, $100 million, something like that. But then there are others who may not want to do that because they're not sure if he can keep this up. And so the fact that the White Sox did not sign him to an extension leads me to believe that for him to come back, it'll be at like a 1-year deal or something like that at a lesser price, when all it takes is one team out there to feel like, you know what, I believe in Carlos Rodon long-term, sign on the dotted line if you want to. And I think that is more realistic for him. We'll see what happens.
Who do you think would replace him in the rotation then, if he goes?
Kopech. Yeah, I mean, Kopech replaces him. And there's still a question with him. How many innings will he be able to go? You know, he hasn't been a starter full time yet. And then Dallas Keuchel, I want to believe that Keuchel is going to come back, because people can very easily forget that in 2020, he was, I think, fifth in Cy Young Award voting. He just lost his, mojo. He just was not the same pitcher, and he needs to figure stuff out, and hopefully he can get back to that guy from 2020. If not, trade deadline, Sox are making moves for the starting rotation, because they need Keuchel to be good next year.
What's your expectation for them right now for 2022?
I mean, it's incomplete because I don't know what other moves are coming, but they should win the division again. I think the Tigers are going to be better. The Twins have to be better. I don't know what happened to them. The Indians, I think, will be better. It'll be a tougher division for them, but they should win the division. But until I know all the moves that they've made this offseason, I can't make any kind of prediction as to what they will realistically do. I know they're going for the World Series. And so I'd like to think if they are going for the World Series, the moves you're going to see them make this offseason are World Series caliber moves. I think they were going after Marcus Semien, but you know, only one team was going to get him. He got 7 years at 31 years old. I didn't think it was going to happen, but it did. So maybe that puts more of a focus on what the next move is for the White Sox, because they didn't get Semien. What's the next big target? And we'll see who that is.
More to come with Chuck Garpon in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Chuck Garpon still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Chuck, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, your reaction to Minnie Minoso getting in the Hall of Fame was what?
Yeah, it's about time. It had to happen. You know, I think for a long time, the writers were so hyper-focused on stats and just his stats. And obviously stats are a big part of why someone gets into the Hall of Fame. But there were multiple layers to Minoso that for whatever reason just never got uncovered, never got revealed. That, you know, he didn't get to play in the majors until he was 25 because of the color of his skin. Meanwhile, Mickey Mantle got to play when he was 19 years old because of the color of his skin. Yogi Berra got to play, I think, when he was 21 because of the color of his skin. Their stats superseded Minnie Minoso for their careers because they played longer. And all it took was just to notice that. And I think he would have gotten many more votes, but for whatever reason, you know, I wasn't a voter, I've never been a voter, but for a generation of voters, they just never went one step further to realize who Minnie Minoso was. I mean, there were some that did, but certainly not enough. And fortunately, because of some media members and the White Sox played a big role in this, credit to them. They got the word out about who he is and what he represents. And it was about time that Minnie Minoso, who was one of the best players in the 1950s, had his day. It's sad and tragic that it didn't happen while he was alive, but his family, I got to spend that night. There was a little celebration at a bar near here. So I got to see his widow and one of his sons and talk with them about it. And so I'm glad he's in, but it should have happened sooner.
What did they say, his family, when they found out?
Yeah, they were ecstatic. I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf contacted them. The Hall of Fame did. Ron Kittle did. You know, he was a mainstay at the ballpark for years. You know, I would see him all the time. He was just the nicest man. And I never got to see him play, obviously. My father did. He was one of his favorite players. It was bittersweet. They admitted it was bittersweet. They celebrated him. They're going to go to Cooperstown this July when he gets inducted. But, you know, baseball missed out on a great opportunity to have inducted him. I think it was last on the ballot in 2014, 2015, when he was alive, and that would have been special.
Chuck, before we finish up today, last question. What's the best moment you've had covering White Sox baseball?
Well, I would like to add to this. I haven't been able to add to it, but my first year covering the team, they won the World Series. So I have not been able to top the first season I covered the White Sox in 2005 ever since. So White Sox, pressure's on you. This has been the one since day one, since year one, I should say. Yeah, I got to cover them. It went by so fast that offseason. Just, it was lickety split. Boston, Anaheim, or Los Angeles. Houston, boom, World Series, and a sweep in the World Series. So I'm still kind of reliving those memories in my mind, but the more that time passes, those memories start to, I don't want to say fade, but they're fading. They are, I fortunately have a lot of, there's a lot of video and memorabilia, and those guys are still around, so I can relive a lot of that with them. And we do interviews with and just have talk about it. And I mean, as again, I do the pre and post game shows with him. He was the manager. So I interviewed Juan Uribe about a month ago. So I cherish my memories and that and the opportunity that I had to get to do that. My first year covering the team, they win and getting to be on that ride. But I'm ready to do it again. I would like to do that at least one more time before my career is over.
Let's hope it's this year, I would say. But Chuck, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate the time. Best wishes as you have some time off, and looking forward to your coverage for the White Sox as they get going next year. Thank you so much.
All right, John. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I talked there with Chuck Garfon, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you. Chuck Garfon himself, Matt Dubion, WCKG, Jim DeTobin, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluel. If you want to watch more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe. So long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?